This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. The folks from Sunway Medical Center in the studio for their first show in 2015, and we're kicking off with nothing other than the topic of fertility. Our phone lines are open if you'd like to ask them a question. It's 03 77 10 9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016 201 9000. Meanwhile, in the studio with me, Dr. Kannapan Palaniappan, who's a consultant fertility specialist and obstetrician and gynecologist, together with Yi Siu Yin, who's the manager of the Fertility Center at Sunway Medical Center. Welcome to the show, both of you. How are you today?
I'm fine. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You are most welcome. How common is infertility in Malaysia, Dr. Kannapan?
It is relatively common. We see nearly 10 to 15% of couples who have this difficulty. So on the average, it's among 1 in 7. And it is increasing, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And the factors that determine a couple's fertility, what would it be?
Okay, basically, if you look at it, most of the time it is age-related, especially when it comes to the women's age. The other factors that would be playing a role is whether she has got any prior medical problems, the lady herself, whether she had undergone certain gynecological surgeries. Then if you look at it from the man's point of view, whether he had any surgeries done at his private region, probably the testis, okay, or whether he has got any issues itself in regards to sperm production.
Okay, and you know, we've done shows in the past, and and statistics fly around all the time, and it now says they now say that back in the day, the problem of infertility was more the woman's problem, right? I think it was 70%, 30% male, but today it's 50-50%. So do we know reasons for that, Dr. Kannapan? I mean, one of the research that I came across in the British Medical Journal is that sperm counts globally is dropping.
That is the picture
50,
that we do
50%.
Get. 50%. That's right.
That's a lot.
It is, it is. If you look at those studies done in those days, more than 50 years ago, they were having higher values. And if you look at WHO itself, it has revised its reference values for the sperm count, motility, and morphology. And if you look at it, all these values actually have been coming down over these years. So they've been revising it again and again. But all said and done, you know, you do not need that number of sperm to fertilize.
That is true. How many million are we talking about?
Now, what is WHO, I mean, their reference point now is at 15 million per mil. It used to be higher, 20, even higher than that before. But logically speaking, you just need one sperm to fertilize an egg, but it doesn't happen that way. Actually, you need a large number of sperms to move towards that direction of the egg, and eventually one will fertilize. Male factor is becoming more prominent, undoubtedly. And rightfully, you had highlighted that nearly half, or even more at times, we see it is due to male factor. And that is one of the reasons why we have come up with so many advanced technologies nowadays, because of the fact that it's a male factor issue.
Okay. Do we know why?
Do we know why? I think it basically comes down to our lifestyle. We all are stressed up. Okay. We are always on the move. We are nowadays, exposed to so much of chemicals, things in the air, pollutants, and all of this actually affects sperm count.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So stress, your environment.
Correct.
Food, I suppose, and all of that.
That's right.
Siu Yin, as manager of the Fertility Center, what do you actually do?
Actually, I'm an embryologist by profession, okay? So as a manager now, I would say, heavy responsibilities. Mm-hmm. All right. So I have to make sure the smooth running of the lab, of the center, day to day running of the center as well. So other than that, I need to ensure that quality services are being provided to the patient, safety to the staff, and not to mention to our beloved doctors as well.
Of course. Because you're the next point of contact after the doctor's done
exactly,
with them.
Exactly, exactly. Yes.
How do you deal with them? It's not easy. I mean, couples are, you know, usually in a emotional state, which is, you know, not in the best place when they come and see you.
Yeah, that's right.
Dr. Kannapan, you can, you know, take them on a medical level and, you know, assure them and stuff like that. But when they come to you, Siu Yin, at the end of the day, this is where it's all going to happen. How do you approach them?
Well, one important thing is that you really need to be patient. You know, you really need to sit down and talk to them. Because for a certain patient, it'll take some time for them to open up to you. So you just need to be friendlier, talk to them more. Then slowly they'll open up to you, then they will pour their hearts to you. And I guess from there, then you're able to counsel them in a proper way. Same goes with the husband. Usually they are the more reserved partner when it comes to fertility treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because for them, I guess their only job is just to produce semen or sperm. Mm-hmm. That's it. But actually, it's not that. You know, actually, we will, I would say that we encourage the husband to even involve in helping the wife, giving the injections, to even up to the certain extent of carrying their bags and stuff like that, and accompany them for all the appointments with the doctor. So, yeah, men or the husband definitely play a bigger role as well.
I often hear couples say, you know, I'm willing to go. The wife will say, I'm willing to go and seek help. But my husband's not very cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When should a couple seek help when trying to have a baby?
Right. Generally, we tell couples that if they don't have any medical issues and they're relatively young, then usually we can advise them to have, regular normal coitus for at least a year. And after a year, if they're unsuccessful, they should seek medical advice.
Okay. And how do you get over, overcome this problem of one person not wanting to come forward? How would you convince the other person?
Okay. Now, that is a very, very important question, I think. It's not easy. It's not easy, especially if one partner is reluctant. And many a times it could be the male partner that who is reluctant to participate. Now, what we would do normally is we would investigate the other partner at that moment, okay? And that in one way can help, because if the other partner we have investigated and we found that the basic investigation showed that everything is fine with this particular partner, then obviously there could be issues with the other partner. So that could be one way. But in most circumstances, we encourage the partner to bring, most of the time it's the husband to come along. And sometimes I actually, offer in the sense that I'm happy if they were supposed to just give me a call even, and then just to assure them that, this is important for them to come and sit down and discuss, and then it opens up.
Yeah, there's always this fear of, what if it's me?
That's right. That's right.
And
it is more so, like she highlighted, husbands are more reserved, men are more reserved. So they're much more worried.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And how would you define infertility?
As I was telling you just now, if the couple had regular unprotected intercourse for a year and they're unable to conceive, they would need to seek medical treatment.
Okay. But that does not mean infertility, though.
It doesn't specifically mean that they are infertile, but I mean in the sense that they need to seek medical advice. I mean, different people have different definitions. Usually what we say is they need to seek some medical advice, and then if they are young, we usually give them another year, and by which time if they have not conceived, then they would definitely need to look at other options.
What sort of tests would you carry out when a couple comes to see you?
If they do, in an early stage, let's say if they're there with us 6 months or maybe a year, and they are relatively young in the sense that maybe they're 20s, in their early 20s, then we would just look at the lady and make sure that she's got no other issues, medical issues or gynecological issues. Then we would just do an ovulation test to make sure that she's ovulating. And for the men, make sure there's adequate sperms. So we would do a semen analysis.
Okay. Failing which, then you delve deeper into what could be possible problems as well.
That's right. That's right.
When we come back, we'll find out more about what Siu Yin used to do as an embryologist.
All right.
Yes, that's the first time we've actually had an embryologist on the show, and as well as we will talk about IVF and the circumstances in which a sperm or egg ought to be, you know, the options to freeze the facility. Is there, under what circumstances would you do that? Our phone lines are open if you have a question for either one of Dr. Kannappan Palaniappan, who is a consultant fertility specialist and obstetrician and gynecologist, or Yi Su Yin, who's the manager of the Fertility Centre at Sunway Medical Centre. Give us a call. The number is 03-7710-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. We have from Sunway Medical Centre, Dr. Kannappan Palaniappan, who's a consultant, fertility specialist and obstetrician and gynecologist, together with Yi Su Yin, who's the manager of the Fertility Centre there. We're discussing fertility or infertility, anything that you want to know in regards to, you know, the whole hormonal cycle that affects your fertility, or whether you want to, there's a need to freeze your sperm or egg, or you want to think about, you know, IVF or anything else, give us a call. The number 03-7710-9000. How does one's fertility change with age, Dr. Kannappan? And I've always had a bone to pick with this because it only affects the woman. So for some reason, the male sperm, you know, regenerates every, what, 60 days?
Oh, it actually, no, it actually forms every minute.
Okay.
Sperms are always continuously forming. Mm-hmm. But by the time it reaches the semen, when it's being ejaculated, that's when it's present in the semen, it is around 60 to 70 days later. So whenever we see a low sperm count, we retrospectively ask the men what had happened maybe 2 months ago, you know, to find out if there was an insult, could be a medical problem or something like that. And generally, we find there is an issue with the semen analysis, we will actually repeat the test to make sure that this test is, there is a problem.
Okay, what are conditions that could affect sperm count?
One of the conditions, as I mentioned earlier, it's our current environment. But if you look at it, it could be job specific. Okay, mm-hmm. If they are working in areas exposed to radiation, they are long distance drivers because they're always seated. The temperature is high. There is a reason why the testis is outside the body, so that the temperature is less compared to body heat. But if you are in an environment with continuous heat, let's say he could be a cook, you know, where he's exposed to heat. The other things could be issues that they had as a child. You know, sometimes they have undescended testes. Men are not aware of that, you know, and then they realize this only later when we actually examine them. There could be issues with viral infection, mostly mumps in secondary school onwards. Mm-hmm. And many people take it lightly, in the sense that, you know, they don't realize that these things can actually affect the sperm count.
Okay. And as an embryologist, mm-hmm. Su Yin, what do you do and how do you come into this whole process of fertility?
The initial stage, I would say that I do semen analysis. I basically play with the sperm all the time.
Really?
Right? Oh, yes.
That sounded very wrong.
So, actually, that would be the first, I did perform semen analysis. And then when there is IVF cases, then I'll be involved in the egg retrieval procedure. All right. And then once I get an egg, then I mix it with a sperm, look at the fertilization, look at the growth of the embryos, and ta-da, put it back inside, and hopefully in 2 weeks' time, some miracle will happen then. Mm-hmm. Yep. So
that's an art, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
What does it take? What does it take for you? Because they're putting all their hopes in your hands to a very large extent.
Well, what I can say is that I will try my best, actually, to create the best embryos for them in the hope that you will get implanted and give them a healthy baby in the end.
Okay.
Yes.
We spoke about fertility and how that changes with age. So we were talking about the male sperm and how it regenerates.
Yes.
But with the women, it works the reverse. Mm-hmm. You know, our ovaries age over time. You want to shed more light on that?
That is a definite issue. That is why we have this component called menopause. You know, when the egg function actually comes to a near standstill, even though it does produce some hormones after that. So basically, when a lady is born, she's got the largest number of eggs. When she reaches menarche, she loses more than half these eggs. And every month, she's menstruating. Nearly 1,000-odd eggs are getting ready to come out. And out of that, one or two actually develop. So she is losing eggs every menstrual cycle. And therefore, as age catches up, obviously the number of eggs, the reserve actually drops.
Okay.
And there's also another concern is as the reserve drops, the quality also drops. This is the main challenge I think Siu Yin will face, to get the good embryo. Because even though we do get good embryos, sometimes we find that they do implant, but unfortunately these couples have miscarriage. Mm-hmm. You know, that is because there could be genetic issues. So these are the challenges we face basically as mothers as the mothers gain age before they actually try or come for
as you said earlier, mm-hmm. you play with the sperm and you pick mm-hmm. the best egg and Siu Yin. But based on your analysis and you've probably seen tons of sperms and ovaries, eggs coming your way, what have been your observations? Are they all old eggs and sperms which have problems with motility and morphology? What are you seeing?
Okay,
probably see trends, no?
Yeah, in terms, if you're talking about sperm, actually, over the years, I'm seeing a drastic drop in terms of the sperm count. Okay, other than that, other than the sperm count, mortality is pretty much the same. But another point that I should add in is that the morphology or the shape of the sperm, which is actually pretty crucial in fertilization, where fertilization will need to happen. You need to have a good looking sperm to ensure that fertilization does happen. So As I can see from the WHO statistic, 10 years ago, it used to be 15% would be the normal value. But nowadays, last year, it has dropped to 4% to be considered as a normal value for men. I mean, for semen analysis. Mm-hmm. So you can see there's a drastic drop in even the normal value.
That is a lot. Is a huge drop.
That's right.
And morphology you were talking about, I never would have thought aesthetics would come into play here, actually. Who would have thought? I always thought of speed and, strength and all of that. So it just translates to the outside world as well. LTY, your question. How are you?
Yes, good afternoon. Good afternoon, doctor.
Good afternoon.
I have one question, please, all right?
Yes.
I'm asking about thalassemia couples. Supposing both of them have thalassemia major, all right?
Right.
And how can you ensure that this couple get a healthy baby? I'm sure you have to try many times. Can you run through the procedure for the listeners? Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, LTY.
Thank you. Right. That's a very good question, especially when both the couples have thalassemia. And this is important because many couples actually do not screen for thalassemia. And it is very unfortunate when both the partners actually have a thalassemia trait minor. And they may actually end up with a child thalassemia major. That could be a major issue. So obviously here we would be looking at doing an IVF because we need to look at these embryos. And this is where Siu Yin will come in because she could offer an additional service. I think it's best Siu Yin speak about that.
Okay, this is what we call it as to perform an embryo biopsy, whereby we take one or two cells out from the embryo. And then
After it's fertilized.
Yes, after it has fertilized, we take out one or two cells from the embryo and send it for DNA analysis. So from there, we are able to choose which of that particular embryo will get affected by the certain disease or thalassemia.
How accurate are these tests?
It's 99.9%, so it's pretty accurate.
It's pretty accurate. Yeah.
And so that is if both couples are
carrying the thalassemia.
Okay. In the event that that happens,
right.
then this
That's
is
right.
a good option.
That's right.
Are repeated miscarriages a sign of infertility, Dr. Kanapan?
The fact that they can conceive, that means they are not having fertility issues. They're able to conceive, but then they are unable to carry the pregnancy through. So it could be either genetic issues, either party may be having or the embryos are having. It could be implantation issues, meaning that the embryo doesn't implant or implants and later has a miscarriage. So here, much more investigations need to be done. But by right, they are not infertile.
Okay. Okay. Many couples with fertility problems go on to conceive with or without fertility treatments. What are some of natural ways to enhance fertility? And when a couple first comes to sit in front of you, Dr. Kanapan, what are some of the things you run through with them?
Well, I actually go through and find out what they have been doing before this. Many people or many couples still do not understand this concept of fertile period. And I have couples where the husband is working in a different place. You know, they meet once a month and you find out that they only meet on certain weekends, which probably...
You're not ovulating.
Yeah, you're not ovulating. So we run through all those basic things again together. And then we try to advise them accordingly. There are also couples who come and who have been married for a few years who have never consummated the marriage. They never had actually intercourse. Okay, so there are many, many issues, you know, that we actually, when we sit down with these couples and we talk to them. So there are, I mean, obviously different things that need to be done. You know, it is not just all about IVF, you know, so I do spend a lot of time talking to them, explaining to them what they could do or what they should be doing, you know, and then we handle it from there.
Hence why it's so important for both people to
That's right. That is all the more reason why both parties have to be there. Mm-hmm. It's very important.
And when does IVF become an option?
IVF usually becomes an option when we know there are major issues. Major issues means that the sperm count is actually extremely low. We find that the lady is having a tubal factor, fallopian tubes both are blocked, and obviously you are unable to conceive, or she had an ectopic pregnancy, tubes were removed. So these are all factors where you have no choice but to go towards an IVF. In most other circumstances is when we have tried everything else. That means naturally they have tried, and we have tried other methods such as intrauterine insemination, where we're just trying to improvise on what nature should do, and all that has failed, then we would go towards an IVF.
Okay, and then they come and land at your doorstep, Julian, at the fertility center. What's the process like from there?
Let's say once, after all the investigation has been carried out, and we will, once doctor has given us the green light that we should start stimulating this lady for IVF treatment. All right, and during the stimulation part, actually, we will teach them how to do the injections daily, because they need to take the injection. It's something like an insulin pen injection.
Okay. So, what are you stimulating?
Stimulating the ovary to produce more than one egg. Yep. So that what we're hoping is that to get around 5 up until to 12 or 15 number of eggs. Mm-hmm. All right. And once all the eggs are ready, then, as I've mentioned before, we will be doing this egg retrieval procedure to get all the eggs out. Yes.
Oh, what about for the male?
For the male, okay. What he needs to do, as I've mentioned as well, just produce a semen on the day of the egg retrieval procedure. Mm-hmm. Yes. And wonders will happen in the lab then.
Okay.
Yeah.
There could be some issues with the male, especially if the counts are low. We would have put him on some supplements, and sometimes we do a backup freezing. That means we would ask him to produce maybe once or twice as a backup, so that we have adequate number of sperms.
But these are obviously tests which you have done before,
right. So every couple actually has got an individualized treatment. So myself and Suyin, we actually sit down, then we discuss among ourselves how to manage this couple. Then after that, we will tell the couple our plan.
Okay.
And then we work as a team here.
But on the couple's side, what kind of preparations do they need to make?
It actually depends on what are the issues. But generally, we would want to optimize if they have any medical problems. We want to optimize their chances of pregnancy. So we will actually encourage them. This is where we give them a lot of counseling. And this is where I have, you know, nurses who are trained in fertility. And these people are very good. They actually spend time counseling. And we actually have a 24-hour care line so that the patients can call in if they got any queries. And after optimizing their condition, and then we look at issues, then we sometimes put them on supplements and other drugs if needed. Then we get them ready for the IVF cycle. So once they're ready for the IVF cycle, then we work together, where I will be seeing them from the clinical point of view, and Suyin and her team will be managing from the embryology point of aspect, as well as counseling and treatment aspects.
When is IVF the right choice?
When is it the right choice if they have tried all other options? Okay, yes, then they do not have a choice but to go towards IVF. Delaying it further may actually reduce the chances of pregnancy in future, because as age catches up, pregnancy rates with IVF also drops.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And the possibility of multiple births. I think we've read enough of how, you know, many people who undergo True. IVF end up with multiple births. But what is the percentage that you would end up with a multiple birth?
It actually depends on the number of embryos transferred. So this is where I actually work with Siu Yin very closely. And she would identify the best embryos, and based on the age of the patient and after discussing with the couple, we actually decide to transfer. If tell you frankly, the more you transfer, the chance of pregnancy is better. So if you are actually to transfer all five or all six, there's a very good chance the patient will get pregnant.
Where are you transferring this to?
Okay, we are actually transferring these embryos, which are ready, into the mommy's womb. We're putting it right into the womb.
So this fertilized eggs.
That's right.
Back into the mom's
womb. Back into the uterus, and within a day or two, by right, it should implant. So the more you put in, the better the chance of pregnancy. But then again, there's a higher risk of multiple pregnancy.
Right.
And inwardly, that could result in early miscarriage, early labor, you know, and multiple issues with multiple pregnancy.
Okay.
So this is why we are very, very cautious. We actually discuss with a couple concerned, okay, and very rarely do we ever transfer more than two embryos so that we could cut down the risk of multiple pregnancy.
Okay. We're discussing fertility. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 0377-109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Michael is listening, and he says... He doesn't understand that people are still ignorant at this age, that they're, you know, not consummating, that their intercourse is not happening. Mm-hmm. Fact is, it is.
It is. I have seen, I do see at least a couple a month, one couple a month, all right, with such issues. All right, many a times they are very shy to talk about it, okay? And this is usually brought to me, to my attention, by my nurses, because my nurses are actually very good. They actually spend time talking to them, and a lot of these ladies actually open up to them and tell them that they actually have these issues. You know, so counseling is usually given by my nurses before they actually see me. So my nurses would have told me about it. And even when I sit in my clinic and I talk to them, okay, I have a number of couples where they actually love each other so much, you know, yet he has got no feelings towards his wife to have intercourse, right? But they are keen on a pregnancy. Okay.
Right.
So they're keen on a pregnancy because they want a child, but they are not sexually attracted to each other, but they love each other. You know, so these things.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough one, that's right. And I have seen quite a number of them. And later on, even with IUI and all that, they've conceived. And I have actually a couple, a patient of mine. She every year without fail sends me Deepavali gifts, hampers, you know. And they're really very happy now that they have a child.
Yeah. Actually, we've done shows with sex therapists who have spoken about how many women, especially Asian women, suffer this pain. Vaginismus, is that what
correct,
you call it?
Correct.
And nobody talks about it because it's taboo in this part of the world. You are supposed to just get married and, you know, have sex. But before that, you are almost, it's almost indoctrinated in you that sex is a bad thing.
Right.
And then when you really have to do it, then it becomes a problem.
That's right.
Do you think that more help needs should be extended to, or education should be extended to a lot of women in this part of the world?
It must be talked about. It must be talked about. And the fact that we have, you know, such avenues for them to approach, you know, and to discuss. I mean, many people do not, are unaware of this. And there are therapies for such issues. But by the fact that, as you said, it's a taboo, you know, and people shy away. And I think by that virtue, and many a times these couples are actually very understanding. They love each other. You know, and the husband comes and tells me he understands his wife has a problem, okay, and he's willing to help out in any other way, and it can be both parties. It's just not the lady alone. Sometimes men, he just doesn't have erection at all, you know. So these things do happen.
Okay. Yeah. We're discussing fertility with Dr. Kannapan Palaniappan, consultant fertility specialist and obstetrician and gynecologist, together with Yi Su Yin, manager of the Fertility Centre at Sanwei Medical Centre. Give us a call if you have a question, 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio. We'll be back right after this market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. We are discussing fertility or infertility. Dr. Kannapan Palaniappan, consultant fertility specialist and obstetrician and gynecologist, together with Yi Su Yin, manager of the Fertility Centre of Sanwei Medical Centre, discussing this topic with us. We left off with IVF. We spoke about when IVF would be the right choice. But what determines outcomes, Dr. Kannapan? Because IVF can be a very costly affair. Or maybe I should ask you, Yin, first, yes. As the embryologist, the person who's working the miracles in the lab, what determines outcomes?
I guess in the end, it comes down to the embryo quality. As long as the couple are able to produce a number of good quality embryos, I would say that they'll stand a chance to at least get pregnant, all right? But, well, it doesn't take just an embryo. You take you have to look at the whether the womb or the endometrium lining is ready for the embryos, for the implantation. And other than that, actually, I would say that stress, you know, especially on the lady, it plays a role as well.
Mm-hmm. As I said earlier, it's an art on your side. How can you bump up that outcome level a little more with just your expertise?
Well, in the newspaper, I think a couple of days ago, they have mentioned about the usage of the embryo glue, you know, by the name. As a layman, they jump into conclusion, oh, you can glue the embryo to the uterus or to the womb. No, actually, it's I would say it's just a gimmick, or they managed to get a nice name being registered as an embryo glue, but actually, it's some sort of like a special media that to be used during the embryo transfer, mm-hmm. which they have found out to increase the implantation rate.
How much does technology help you in this process?
I would say about 5 to 6% increase of the success rate.
Okay.
Yeah.
In what areas does technology help you?
Actually, it's not a technology. It's just a solution or a media that we use to transfer the embryo back into the womb. So it's just a special solution that we can purchase from the vendor. That actually, this particular solution that people has been talking about, hyping about it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And if we look at, the clinical factors here, obviously we want to optimize, as I told you, we will try to optimize the issues that the couples are facing. And after the transfer has been done, we usually give medication to support the womb. And sometimes, obviously, it won't implant. So what we need to do is we actually have extra embryos most of the time. And we go back and we use them what we call as a frozen embryo cycle. The more you try, obviously the chances are better. Generally, it is said that if a couple are going to try for IVF, they would need to try at least 3 times. And in most circumstances, if they had tried 3 fresh IVF cycles, there would be a very high chance that they would have conceived. And if they were unable to conceive through 3 IVF, then they actually have other issues that we need to address. So the thing here is, important thing here is, one, optimize whatever issues they have. Number two is, don't give up. It's very important.
And when IVF doesn't work, what are some of the factors behind the failure?
Well, both parties could be having actually issues. It could be genetic in nature, all right? Number two, it could be actually the endometrial lining, the womb. There are issues in the womb. There could be abnormal enlargement of the womb and all those aspects. End of the day, fertilization itself could be an issue, where during a time of fertilization, something is not going on right, even though Su Yin is doing her very best. So there are many things. So we could, in most circumstances, we are able to identify this and we are able to counsel the couple.
But genetic abnormalities in the embryo, as Su Yin said earlier, can be picked out with new technology. Am I correct? Yes. And it's 99%.
Yes, correct.
Accurate.
Let's say for a couple, you managed to produce five embryos. We send all five embryos for this DNA analysis, or we call it as a PGS or PGD. But what if all comes out badly?
Mm-hmm.
It gives you all negative, or all the embryos are affected.
Right.
Yep. It, there is a risk of that as well. So you might end up having nothing at all in the end.
Right.
Yes.
What are options after that?
What are the options after that? Obviously, as I said, we have to keep on trying. But we will only keep on trying if we find that there were issues that we could improve, okay? Or let's say in this scenario where she says all the embryos had genetic issues, then we would need to rediscuss with the couple again. Obviously, everything here is individualized. But let's say if they have been trying and trying and everything has failed, obviously here now we need to consider, you know, we have to be very realistic. There could be a time where we tell the couple, please go for an adoption. Or, right, whether they are keen to use other gametes from other donors. Okay. But these are issues that are very individualized, right? And we need to look at many factors here before we discuss this option.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but fertility treatment is expensive.
Fertility treatment is expensive if they're going towards an IVF. If they are just coming in just for routine checkups, you know, and basically for issues like if the lady is not ovulating, we're giving her ovulation medication. If they're trying an intrauterine insemination, then the costs are quite standard, quite reasonable. But if you look at IVF per se, obviously it is slightly expensive. The price range would probably be around 12,000 to 14,000.
Per cycle.
And
correct. What are we paying for? Your expertise, the embryologist's hand and the art, you know?
You're actually paying for everything.
Right.
Right. From the consultation to the drugs to the procedure, as well as until the time that you are diagnosed whether you're pregnant.
Okay. And when do you opt to freeze whether your sperm or your egg? When would that be an option? Or why should it be an option?
I would say that sperm freezing is actually a good option for male partner who often travel, all right, or outstation to do work commitment, all right. And we, of course, do suggest sperm freezing for most couple undergoing IVF treatment so that the husband doesn't have a performance anxiety on the particular day whereby we really need the sperm mm-hmm. to fertilize the egg. All right, and of course, another thing is that it can actually act as a good reserve for the male partner who has very severe low sperm count. Okay, likewise, we do suggest sperm freezing for male cancer patient. You know, please freeze your sperm before you go for chemo or radiotherapy. Yep.
And the eggs?
The eggs, the same issue again. Here, some would actually want to consider freezing the eggs for certain reasons. It could be social reasons, or it could be, again, they are undergoing some form of chemotherapy, that means cancer treatment. Either than that, normally we don't freeze the sperm as a routine when we do an IVF cycle, unless the situation arises where the husband is unable to produce sperms on that day of the egg collection, which is very, very rare. As like Suyin highlighted, we probably would have already had the backup sperms prior to that.
Okay. We have a question from Stanley Wu. Stanley is asking, what is the optimal age for women to start preparing to get pregnant?
The earlier the better.
It's always the standard answer. The earlier the better. Yeah. And I suppose in a way, freezing your egg could be an option if you think, you know, you're getting older. And,
That's right.
You've got no partner as yet.
Yes. It is a trend. It is a trend in Western countries where they actually offer this service, okay, especially for women who are very career-orientated, and they may decide to have a child when they're 45 or 46 and they decide to freeze their eggs at the age of 30. Yeah, these are options. But I think that trend hasn't caught up yet with Malaysia as such. We don't advocate it, but the services are available.
Okay. And how do you manage expectations? And I think this is the most difficult part of your job, really.
True.
Well, what we normally tell the patient is to stay positive, but at the same time, please be prepared for the worst outcome as well, you know, so that they don't crumple badly once they receive the bad news. So just get them be prepared for both, you know, for the bad or the worse, or for the happy news as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So actually, from the beginning itself, you know, as I said, we optimize the condition. So I actually discuss with them in length. Okay, I also look at their work environment and everything else, because all this can actually add on to the stress. If you know, it's the outcome is not to what the expectation is, and she's already stressed at work and she's stressed elsewhere, that means it's going to cause a lot of depression. So here, I actually spend time with a couple, talk to them, you know, try how to improve things around them, you know, and make sure that this is the time that they are relatively free from work, you know, relatively free from other tension that happens. And obviously, like Suyin highlighted, we tell them what are the chances are and why we are not transferring so many embryos. You know, our aim is not to get pregnancy on board, but to have a child actually at end of that 9 months. That is very important. So this is where we actually try to limit the number of embryo transfers. If pregnancy doesn't happen and she has got frozen embryos, fine. You still can use them the subsequent month or month later. You know, so you have to look at it in a long-term aspect and be positive.
When would one have to concede that it is not likely or maybe impossible to conceive?
As I mentioned, if she has already tried 3 IVF cycles, if she has, or the embryos have already been assessed for genetic abnormalities, you know, and all that has been done, all right, then it comes down to, you know, we have to really sit down and discuss, are we going to look at adoption as an option, mm-hmm. you know, as I mentioned earlier, using other people's eggs or sperms. But these are all very individualized topics.
Yeah. Pressures of society and family, we know traditionally, has mm-hmm. always been very hard on the woman.
That's right.
How do you help them manage that? Because that's unnecessary stress as well.
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely. Most of the couples see they shy away from social events, everything because of this, you know. And their immediate family, their extended family, everyone is asking them, you know, what is happening and all that. So here, what I normally do, as I said, I spend a lot of time talking to them, okay? And some of them do come in with their parents, you know, I do spend time even with their parents, with the consent of the couple, you know, and tell them there are issues, you know, and how we can help them, but you have to give them a bit of space. It is not easy.
I'm sure.
Right. You know, and
it's probably easier doing your work as an obstetrician, gynecologist, and a fertility specialist.
That's right. As I said, I spend a lot of time talking.
Yeah.
Okay, because their stress level is actually sky high.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. Your message, what would you like to leave us with on fertility, Suyin?
Do not delay in seeking treatment. That's pretty important right from the start. All right. Because I feel that the earlier you seek help, the better the chances of you conceiving or even realizing your dream. Yep.
I agree with that. You know, don't shy away. This is a problem. All right. The world has accepted, WHO has accepted as infertility is a medical problem. You know, so therefore, please do seek treatment. Right? At least do the basic investigations. All right. Know what are the issues. And this avenue of IVF is actually available, whether it's in the private government, semi-government sectors. So there are many avenues they can actually look at.
Okay, I'm going to quickly take just one last call from Rita. Rita, how are you today?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Very quickly, your question, Rita.
Yeah, my question is, I am just wondering, I went through operation for fibroid. Mm-hmm. And after the operation, apparently I'm not conceiving. That's why I'm kind of worried.
Okay.
You know, before the operation, I'm okay. Like, I can predict my timing, you know, so I can conceive. But now, it's worrying me because already a year plus after my operation, and I'm still not conceiving.
Okay,
I could understand that. You know, she's had a surgery done to remove a growth from the uterus, but that is only one component. The womb is actually the place where the embryo stays. So now we actually have to look at the ovary itself and make sure that she's ovulating. Okay, could be a problem with the ovary itself. So she would need to see a gynecologist and make sure that she's having regular cycles in the sense that she's ovulating every month.
Thank you for calling, Rita. Hope that answers your question.
Okay, thank you both very much.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thank you, Mira. Talking about infertility, Dr. Kannappan Palaniappan, consultant fertility specialist and obstetrician and gynecologist, together with Yi Su Yin, manager of the Fertility Centre of Sunway Medical Centre, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.